You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Good morning. Welcome to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Bach, and Calby on the board coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us, call or text at 855-752-4842. You can also leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. She has shared her story in the Wisconsin Examiner, in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, in the New York Times, and we are so delighted and grateful to be joined by her now. Megan Kling is here. Good morning, Megan. Thanks for being here. How are you? Oh. Megan, can you hear me?
Looks like we might be having a little bit of...
She just froze.
Okay.
Megan had mentioned when we were setting this up that she might have a... Megan, are you there?
Hold on.
I'm here. Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Yes. Can you hear us?
I can hear you now.
There we go.
If that happens again, I'm going to call in, okay?
Perfect. That's perfect. Absolutely. Well, we'll see how it goes. Yeah. Technology is one of those things. It's a thing. So anyway, thank you for being here. Thank you for joining us and for sharing your story, because I think it is important. And especially when I've read through all of these stories, you are not the only woman who has experienced this. You are not the only woman who is experiencing this. So if you wouldn't mind to take us through your story and what happened with your pregnancy.
Yeah. So first off, I'd like to say, you know, I've been born and raised in Wisconsin, same as my husband. We have two beautiful little daughters. And we've always imagined having three children. And when we got pregnant in the summer of 2023, we didn't expect it to be any different from our prior two pregnancies, which were very normal and healthy.
Right.
Went through the routine of maternal prenatal checkups. And it wasn't until the 20-week ultrasound that we were alarmed that something was wrong. So I live in rural Western Wisconsin. I went to my local rural hospital and, I happened to be, over 21 weeks pregnant at the time. And after that ultrasound, my doctor, who I trust very much, came into the doctor's office and shared with me that something was very wrong. That there was little to no amniotic fluid. And with their ultrasound equipment, they could not make a confirmed diagnosis, but it was bad. And I was somewhat in shock. I wasn't prepared to ask a lot more questions. And at that time, just was clinging on to hope, we wouldn't get the most devastating news that I felt like my doctor was somewhat preparing me to get. We had to be referred to a larger hospital, which again takes time to get that appointment with maternal fetal medicine. She referred me to La Crosse as well as Rochester, Minnesota. And in my mind, if there's any surgery or any treatment that my baby is going to need, Rochester is the best place to be.
Right.
So that's where that was in my mind. We were able to get into La Crosse about 4 days later. By that time, I was 22 weeks pregnant, and my husband and I, in tears, received the most devastating news that a pregnant person could receive, and that was that our baby was non-viable. He had a diagnosis called bilateral renal agenesis. He had developed with no kidneys and no bladder, and he also had brain and heart abnormalities seen. With this condition, because the amniotic fluid is made up primarily of the baby's urine by the second trimester, that was the reason there was no amniotic fluid, because his urinary tract was not operating. And when that occurs in pregnancy, that amniotic fluid is there to help the babies develop their lungs so his lungs would never develop. And it's also there for protection to help him move around in the womb.
Right.
Without that amniotic fluid, these babies are born with bone deformities because the pressure the mother's body puts on her womb forces the baby's bones to bend as they grow inside of you. And so you can imagine I am picturing what quality of life my baby is going to have, even as he's growing inside of me. When we received that diagnosis, I asked my doctor what our options were.
Sure.
And she, of course, proceeded to tell me, you know, I'm still healthy. I could continue the pregnancy if I choose. And I believe I cut her off and said, I cannot carry a baby another 4 months knowing he is going to die. It was not in my best physical wellness health. It was not in my best interest of my mental health.
Seriously.
I have a career. I've got two little girls I have to go home and be a mom to. And I didn't believe carrying that baby was in my own baby's best interest because it would ultimately prolong suffering for all of us. But because that was in November of 2023, we were in a state of the 1849 complete ban on abortion.
Was still in effect here in Wisconsin. Yep.
And so I had no options. No options in my situation to make any choice at all.
I just want to stop you for 1 second because, again, because of the law in Wisconsin at that point in your pregnancy, here in Wisconsin, you had no choices except to carry it to term, correct?
Correct.
That was it.
That was it.
And if anyone is just joining us, by the way, I just want to let people know who we're talking to. Megan Kling is our guest. We will have links in our show notes. She has appeared in several articles in the Journal Sentinel, the Wisconsin Examiner, the New York Times, talking about her experience with her third pregnancy. So continue, Megan.
So we had kept our appointment that we had made at Rochester, Minnesota, which was ultimately 10 days out from our original appointment at my local rural hospital. So by the time we were able to get into Rochester, Minnesota, I was 23 weeks and 1 day pregnant. And my choice was to be induced and deliver my baby naturally. There's no right choice in that situation, but that's what I felt was right for me. Yep. And the healthcare that I wanted to choose. And so they were able to give us a second opinion. They confirmed the diagnosis without a doubt because my husband and I just needed to know that there was no chance. And, they induced me after that second opinion, and I was able to deliver our first baby boy the next morning at 23 weeks and 2 days gestation. They did not think he would survive delivery, but they prepared us in case he did. And he was ultimately born with a beating heart. And so they cleaned him up and they handed him to us. And we were able to hold and love our baby boy for about an hour until he passed away in our arms.
We're so sorry for your loss, Megan, you and your husband and your family. And I cannot imagine being in such a horrific situation with such, for one thing, to not be able to get the healthcare you need in the state in which you live is horrible. It's just horrible. And then I'm so sorry for your experience, and I am so grateful for your willingness to talk about this, because you must have heard now from all kinds of women who have been in similar situations to yours.
Yeah, I've been able to be connected with women across the country who have experienced just devastating pregnancy complications in their journey to build their families, just like we were. And for all of us that are sharing and speaking out, there's a whole lot of women that are experiencing the same tragedy that just aren't to a point where they're willing to share
Sure.
their trauma publicly yet.
Or they're afraid of the backlash. And we'll get to that in a minute, because I'm sure that's a component of this, tragically.
And I think, Megan, one of the important things, too, that's... It's wonderful to hear these stories because it's telling the narrative that's getting lost by some who just want to paint access to this healthcare as nothing more than birth control, which is offensive and disgusting. And we need to hear from people such as yourself and others saying, no, this is, you are a mother who wanted more children. You and your husband wanted to grow your family. This was a situation that happened. It is devastating. But it does happen. Therefore, you need the treatment, the access,
the health care
that is necessary to make sure that also your body isn't damaged by what could happen in these pregnancies. So, again, I'm there's not a question, and I'm holding back tears right now because I don't. I just want to thank you for being here because it's important. Thank you.
You mentioned in some of the articles, and again, we will put these in our show notes so you can read them yourself. In the New York Times article, they speak to several other women who also went through some situations similar to yours, Megan. And several of these women had said they think it's important now to use the word abortion because that's what it is. This is the medical term for it, a spontaneous miscarriage. In medical terminology, is an abortion. And there has been this effort on one side to dance around that. I have heard Republican politicians say abortion is not healthcare. No pregnancy should need an abortion. I have heard male politicians say that. I can't imagine how you feel when you hear, especially men, say something like that.
Yeah, and to be honest, you know, my husband and I had a really hard time using the word abortion when we experienced our termination, because there's a stigma
around it.
It is specifically for unwanted pregnancies, irresponsible women, and that was not our situation whatsoever. We were married. We were growing our family. This was a very much loved, wanted baby.
Right.
And yet we, who never thought we would choose abortion, were put in an impossible situation with no good outcome, where that choosing abortion was the best choice for us at the time.
Megan Kling is our guest. We are talking about her experience with a pregnancy in which, tragically, she lost her very much wanted son. And the fact at that point in time, Wisconsin was still under the 1849 ban. So in order to get the health care that you needed, you had to leave the state. You had to go to Minnesota. Obviously, the situation is different now in Wisconsin on the ground. That has changed. But there are still women all over this country who are in similar situations to yours, and many of them, we had a listener call into a different show, to Todd Alba's show, and say, well, it's not like anyone is making women carry these babies when they're dead. They are. This is tragically the horrific reality of what women across the country, depending upon where you live, are dealing with. It is. We're going to continue with Megan Kling. And continue this conversation. It's important to talk about. I want to hear what you have heard after your bravery in coming forward to share your experience. Our conversation continues on the other side. Stay close. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Good morning. Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Cal B on the board, coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can join us at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Our guest is Megan Kling. She is here to share her experience with complications in her third pregnancy. She ultimately ended up leaving the state in order to get the health care that she needed. You made an important point, Megan, during the break about even though the 1849 ban is no longer in effect here in Wisconsin, that would have still meant that you would have had to leave the state to get the care you needed because of the 23-week ban, right?
Well, there's still some lack of clarity there. So many people refer to Wisconsin having a 20-week ban. I believe what the law technically says is 20 weeks post-fertilization, which is technically more like 22 weeks, but nobody measures pregnancy post likely fertilization.
Right.
So hospitals or doctors are always going to be a little bit more hesitant.
They're going to hedge.
And so they're going to hedge it right at 20 weeks.
Yep.
So for most women who receive that 20-week ultrasound, if there is any severe complication or diagnosis like we received, it's too late already.
You have to leave the state.
Correct.
Yes. Megan, were you aware before you got this diagnosis that this was the situation on the ground in Wisconsin? Did you know at that point that you were going to have to go someplace else?
I think I was a little naive. I understood what Roe v. Wade being overturned meant. I understood that Wisconsin had no exceptions to abortion. However, I was naive to all of the numerous pregnancy complications that can occur that would lead to an abortion for medical reasons. And so even though I understood the atmosphere of where Wisconsin was at, I did not think that I, as a married woman trying to grow my family, I didn't think it was going to affect me. And I was very wrong for being that naive.
But you're not alone. And you're not alone. There are a lot of women, I think. And again, you had two perfectly fine pregnancies where nothing went wrong. So I can see why would you even let that cross your brain if that hadn't been your experience up to that point?
I just also think it goes back to what we were saying earlier, is that we equate abortion to a certain type of person, which is never the case. There's always different stories, but we are becoming more educated throughout these past few years on what this does and what this impacts on the women who are having the children, the families it affects, us. Even as, you know, Dr. Lyerly has said, this affects all of us, regardless of your station in life. And it's important for us to know this. So again, Megan, thank you for coming here and sharing your story. And we ask those listening to share this story with other people, because it's just very easy to say, well, you know, of course I support abortion access, but what do you know about it? You need to know, before you advocate and endorse, you must know. So it's important to hear these stories. We must hear more of these stories.
Again, we've mentioned, Megan, that you've been in the Journal Sentinel and the Wisconsin Examiner, even the New York Times. What have you heard from folks since? Because I think that's very brave. It takes a lot of courage to come forth like this and be honest and open about it. It does.
I would say I have had overwhelming positive support from people, from community members, family, strangers, just thanking me for speaking up and helping them understand that just a typical Midwest mom can be affected by abortion bans. And it doesn't matter how you feel on the topic. Anyone can be affected, whether you think so or not. But it is very controversial, and it's been very vulnerable to share such a tragedy publicly.
Yep.
You open yourself up, and there always is going to be some negativity out there. And I think a majority of that comes from either an extreme religious side or those that just don't like me sharing my story because it doesn't fit the stigma that they believe abortion to be. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep. You're not the person they want to demonize. You're not the right person to demonize.
I also think, telling this story, for Midwesterners especially, pokes at our convenience and comfortability. Like, well, you don't have to share it with everybody. Talk about it with your friends and say, you know, blah, blah, like whatever the excuse is. But really it comes to you standing up and exposing yourself and being vulnerable, and other people just have to deal with that. And if it makes them feel uncomfortable, I'm sorry for them, but we need to hear this.
It's about the reality of what's happening on the ground. It is. It's just, that's what it is about. How is your husband? How are your girls? How are you right now?
Right now I'm good. I was lucky enough to find access to a therapist that specializes in infant loss. And after giving birth to a baby who died in our arms, I can't tell you how hard that was to work through that grief. And then the anger that compounded from being shamed away from my home state in order to do what I knew was right for me. But we're doing good. I mean, it was a fork in the road and we chose to be resilient, and I could not have it be just a sad story that we experienced. And so I chose to share and I chose to speak up in hopes that, you know, I can cause just a find a little bit of good from this horrible thing we went through.
Megan Kling, thank you so very, very much for joining us this morning. All the best to you and your husband and your girls. Take care of yourself. Be strong. Thank you.
Thank you.
We have news coming up next. Stay with us. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network. And welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Calvin Butenoff, coming to you live from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us. You can call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. You can also leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. We are very, very excited to be joined by our next guest, a comedian, a comedy writer, and now an author of America, Let Me In. Felipe Torres Medina is here. Good morning, Felipe. How you doing?
Hi, Gene. Thanks for having me. Hey, Greg.
Hello.
It is. I was so amazed. I texted you or I emailed you last week and I said I would love a copy of your book, which I don't know how you did that. Seriously, that is the fastest anything has ever come through the mail. Do you know Louis DeJoy personally?
But my incredible book agent, Andrew Blatt, at William Morris Endeavor, and her assistant, Caroline, who like mobilized because I was not home. I wanted to, if I had been home, I would have mailed it to you myself. But I was doing a book event in San Francisco. So I just emailed them and was like, can you please send a book to Jane? And they were very quick.
It was, I couldn't believe it.
I think they sent it before you even asked, because literally we got it. We're like, how is this here now?
How is this possible?
This is how easily we are like amazed. We're like, the mail is so fast.
Well, now you are going to be in the area, correct, on the 10th?
Yes, on the 10th, I will be in Milwaukee at Boswell Books doing a book event with my wife, who is also an author and an Emmy Award-winning comedy writer. She writes for Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. And so we'll be in conversation talking a little bit about America and about my book about immigration, my funny book about immigration.
Yes. And that's an important thing to keep in mind. This is a very serious topic, obviously, especially in the days that we are living in right now. But you take a very lighthearted approach to explain to people all of the different processes people have to go through if they want to immigrate here, including, you know, I had no idea, Felipe, until I looked at your book, how many different visas there are.
And that's not all of them. That's just the ones that I found like fun to write about. That's
I mean, how
many? There's a lot of really boring ones. Yeah.
There are exceptions, you know, if a company wants to expand, if you want to come here to start a business, if you want to do, I mean, it is remarkable how I had no idea. I had no idea. And for me, a native of this country, if I find this confusing, I can only imagine how confusing it is for people who want to move here.
Well, it's funny because to me, what's really interesting, having been here and been an immigrant in this country for 12, 13 years, I came here in 2013, so 12 years almost now, is that Americans have a lot of opinions on immigration. Everyone in America has an opinion on immigration, but very few people know how the system really works. And you see it all the time in social media, and you see it all the time in conversation, you know, with your neighbors, your friends. Everyone's like, oh, well, they just need to do this, they just need to do that.
Just go through the process.
Exactly. Do things the right way, which to me is the biggest myth that exists out there, because the right way changes all the time, you know, and the right way is, even now we saw, like, day one of the second Trump administration, the right way was to apply for asylum using an app that the government had created. And they shut down that app within hours of the second administration starting. Now, you can debate whether that's good or bad. That's everyone's entitled to their opinion about what that is. But the truth of the matter, the objective truth, is that the right way was to do that. And they just decided, actually, that is no longer the right way. You cannot do that. So the idea of coming here the right way is such a myth, because it's shifting sands. It changes all the time.
And we see that, unfortunately, with people in certain immigrant populations that were granted, say, temporary protected status.
Yeah, like TPS. Exactly. TPS.
And now that was legal. Mm-hmm. That was legal. These people are here legally. And then the Trump administration decided, yeah, we're going to revoke that TPS. And now they all have to leave. And they've been here for 20 years.
Yeah. And I think it also is a testament to the failure of the system itself. You know, this is supposed to be a funny book, and I really don't want to get too bogged down on the technicalities of everything, but TPS is in and of itself, it's in its name, it's temporary. And these people have been here for 20 years, and they should have a way to stay and to remain, and they've made this place their home. But what really this proves is that there hasn't been any comprehensive immigration reform in 30 years since Bill Clinton was president. And so we have a system that's like, we've been papering over the cracks for 30 years. Yep. And all of a sudden it's become this thing where someone can just come in and say, like, well, I'm removing the temporary out of the temporary protected status. The temporary element is over. And so, oh crap, we should have done the reform so that this didn't happen.
Right.
You know, and that's the thing, too, for me, Felipe. By the way, if you're just joining us, we are talking to Felipe Torres Medina, who is the author of America Let Me In. Choose your immigration story. And we're talking about the book and the process. And one thing that I feel like, you know, if you can take a step back, I'm speaking for myself right now. You see the left kick the can down the road because I feel like they were afraid to make hard choices or say the hard things out loud,
yes.
Whereas Republicans now just get to say exactly what they've been thinking for a long time. And this is where we are, because what they are doing seems like, quote, some movement. Like, there's been very little movement, but because they're doing something, people will see this as, well, this is a start at least, right? We'll fix it later. We'll bring the people back who got that. Those were all mistakes. But the problem is we're seeing even the mistakes, they're like, nope, they can stay down in El Salvador or whatever country they're going to. And I mean, I just feel like, it, as you just said, it's a failure of decades for both sides to really have a frank conversation about a topic that at the end of the day, not everyone is going to agree on a solution.
Yeah, 100%. And look, the system exists and there are ways to do it. But I think a little bit of the point that I try to make in the book and a little bit of the things that I want to point out is the satire that exists in the book is that the system works if you have money.
Yes.
That to me was like one of the biggest things that I found out doing all the research for the book. You know, I found it out firsthand with my own immigration experience, but there's also all the other kinds of visas. And in truth, like having money is the biggest hack. And what we've created is a system where we are rewarding having money over many other things that we might need. You know, there's genuine examples in other countries of how things could work differently. I remember Pete Buttigieg, when he was running for president in 2020, suggested something that I don't know if it would have worked, but it would have been different. That was called the Heartland Visa, which was visas for skilled workers in jobs that are needed in particular parts of the Heartland where there is no where there are no people who can do those jobs. And so that's kind of similar to the way that Canada issues province visas.
Yes.
And, you know, I don't know if it would have worked, but it would have been something and it would have been different. And we would have talked about immigration not as something that needs to be corrected or vilified. We would have talked about it as a way to fulfill the promise of America, right? To mm-hmm. fill jobs, to make communities better. You know, the inaction on the left leads to the discourse of they're eating the cats and the dogs.
Yes.
That is a straight line. If you create a community, if you create a sense of like these people are coming here to work, these people are coming here to build community, rather than they're on temporary protected status, technically it's legal, I don't know, I'm not going to talk about it really, just ignore it. You create that straight line. Whereas if you form a narrative around immigration as a positive, which it is a positive for our country, and we can see it, it's tangibly a positive economically, then you can avoid these narratives and these conversations about immigration is all bad, because people in their communities will see that it isn't all bad.
It sounds like to me, Felipe, and I am not a very smart person, that you are saying that what we need to do is in the overarching theme of it is come together, have a long conversation about this and come up with solutions. Because what I'm hearing from you is just these are trying to create maybe not the perfect, maybe not permanent, but something better than we have, because that's how we move forward. And I know as a comedian, that's what you signed up for, is to become an explainer of yeah. these issues to the people out there. Because I'm a comedian too. I know everyone looks to me for advice. I'm like, I have a political science degree. Don't ask me. I don't know.
Yeah. And I mean, look, that's the other thing. I've been touring with this book for a little bit, thankfully. And I've been able to go to all sorts of parts of the country. I was in Boston, where like the week or the 2 weeks after ICE detained this student at Tufts University, mm-hmm. who has now thankfully been released. And I was in Miami last month. And it's one of those things where you can see how the current administration and their policies are affecting the communities in a way that's very visceral and real. And you know, in the end, I'm like, but I'm a comedian. You know, I totally feel the fear and I totally feel the sadness. And, you know, it is really sad, but how about some jokes? Because that's the only way I can, you know.
Well, and we do that on this program too. Yeah. We are living in very serious times. We all appreciate that, and we talk about that a lot. But for the last half an hour of our show, Felipe, we call it Audio Sorbet, where we talk about silly, non-important things, and then we wrap up the show with this shouldn't be a thing. Because I just think if we don't take a moment to laugh about something, we're all going to self-destruct.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. I could ask you a thousand. I have other questions I want to ask you. Mainly, I want to talk to you about just your experience with that process too, and we can talk about that more when we come back. Because, as you said, you are an immigrant. You've been here for 12 years. You know that process. You've gone through it, and you have a unique outlook. From you know, it's not you work on a television show, so I imagine that they may look at it as like, well, you are working in an industry. You are a skilled worker in that sense. And trying to figure out what your journey through this process has been versus what other people may go through. And I'm interested to hear about that from you as well. So,
but as you mentioned, Felipe, it takes money. It takes mm-hmm. money. Yeah. If you want to emigrate here, this is an L1 visa. We're not going to go into this a whole bunch, but if you want to file for an L1 visa, It is going to cost you $460, $500, $190, $2,500. Yeah, it's a lot of money.
It's just fees. Yeah, I think that was my wife's idea when I was writing those. The book has explainers on all these visas. So it's like, I think you should list how the fees.
What it costs.
And all these kinds of visas. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Because it actually helps your prove your point.
We're going to continue our conversation with Felipe Torres Medina. He is a comic, a writer, and the author of the book, America, Let Me In. Stay close. You are listening to Matinee on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Good morning. Welcome back to Matinee on Air. Jane Matinee, Greg Bach, Dr. Slide on the board. Coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. Join us, call or text at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching in the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Coming after the 10:30 news, audio sorbet for today. You know, there's a national day for everything.
Mm-hmm.
National Chocolate Chip Cookie Day, National Yoga Day, whatever day. What should be your national day?
National
what are we
Greg
missing?
Day. I like
National,
it.
Beyond just National Greg Day. What would be your day? You need a day. What is your national day? That's our audio sorbet coming up after the 10:30 news. We'll wrap up the show as we always do with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Today it's the You're in Trouble Now edition. Stay tuned for that. Currently, our guest is an author. He writes for late night television, and he wrote America, Let Me In. A Choose Your Immigration Story. Felipe Torres Medina is here. It's a wonderful, lighthearted look at our immigration system. It's a lighthearted way to look at what a mess our immigration system is.
There it is. And earlier, I was alluding to the journey that you had as far as your immigration travels, and from coming here to where you are right now in America. I'm not saying like what's your status, but like just what your experience is, because honestly, you working in television, the only thing I have is listening to John Oliver talk about his. And he said, even as a guy who starred on television, it's still a scary process. It's a long, expensive process with hoops you have to jump through. And I just wanted to know if you could speak on your journey thus far and what you've gone through.
Yeah, it's a scary, long, and expensive process. I moved here in 2013. I came here to study. I came on a student visa. And after that, I did something called OPT. And this stuff is all in the book, told in a like slightly fictionalized version of my life as part of one of the paths you can take in the book, because as the title suggests, it's kind of interactive, so you can pick different kinds of visas, different kinds of stories, and see which one you get. But one of these is mine. So I got something called OPT, which is what students get to be able to work here for a year. Some students get 3 years if they're in STEM. I was in the arts, so I only got 1 year. And after that, I got something called an O-1 visa, which is an alien of extraordinary ability visa, which is a ridiculous name. And you can tell how, even as I was starting to like become a comedian here, I was like surrounded by the absurd.
Yeah.
Lots of material.
Yeah. I mean, kind of, you know, because this visa is called alien of extraordinary ability. It makes you sound like you're like in the X-Men or you're like Alf. You know,
you are ET. You are ET, essentially.
Alf reference. Yes.
And so, you know, I was starting to kind of like come to terms with all that. And also, I had a lot of friends asking me, like, oh, like, well, you know, I had, again, these are like young liberal progressives in New York being like, oh, but you went to school here, so you're fine, right? And I had to be like, what? No.
No.
You have no idea how the immigration system works. Like, no, I have to get like visas and I have to like do it under certain time frames. And if I don't do it, I have to leave. You know, I had issues with professors at my university. I went to Boston University, a great school. I learned a lot, but I had professors who had no idea how the system works. So they were like, oh, well, you can just get like a barista job. Because I went for to get my master's in screenwriting. And they were like, you can just move out to LA and like get a barista job and write. And I was like, I can't. That's like legally not allowed if you're on a student visa. Even if you get a work permit, you have to work in your area of expertise on the thing you went to school for. So you can't just get like a day job, a survival job, and then like work on your art on the side until you get like the big break, you know, kind of like the idealized vision of how you make it in Hollywood.
Also, can you just imagine that that was the fix? Like, just, hey, everybody just go work at Starbucks or a coffee shop. You'll be fine. Don't worry about it. It's fine. And that's, I mean, and that, I think that ultimately is the root of the problem too, is that, you know, you think of the problem with this discussion being those who disagree and want to do extreme things. But the bigger problem, I would say, are those who don't, who support you as a person and being here, but know almost nothing about it. So just think, well, as long as I support them, good work on me, I'm good to go. You know what I mean? So they alleviate themselves the responsibility of being proper advocates versus saying just like,
you'll be fine.
I say this all the time. I don't know. I think you should ask an expert because I can't tell you that answer. I don't know this experience. Ask Felipe, but don't ask Felipe. He's got other things to do. Buy his book.
Well, you can ask me. You can buy the book, but I do have to point out that I am not an immigration lawyer or an activist. I am a comedian.
Right. Important distinction.
Wait a minute. I thought all comedians were activists. That's what I've been told these past few years. I mean, if you have a podcast, you are basically a humanitarian
advocate.
That's
true. That's true. If you have a podcast, you speak the truth. Joe Rogan taught me that.
Felipe Torres Medina is our guest. He's the author of America, Let Me In, A Choose Your Immigration Story. It's very funny. You should pick it up.
And you're going to be here. You're going to be in Milwaukee on Thursday at Boswell Books. I will make sure to put the information on our show notes. And I'm pretty much sure I'm going to come down there and see. You said you and your wife are going to be there, right?
Correct. It's there. It's at 6:30 p.m. at Boswell.
Perfect.
And it's a lovely little bookstore.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Yeah.
Yep. We'll see.
I'm very excited.
Yeah. I'll put that in the show notes and we'll get down there and see you. And thank you so, so much. And congratulations, Felipe.
We would love to have you back. There's a lot more to discuss. I would love to hear some of the comments you're hearing from folks after you address them at these appearances. So we will be in touch. And thank your thank your publicist again for this is the fastest book that has ever come through the mail. It's a miracle. We have news coming up next. Stay close. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Thank you so much, Felipe.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.